So who do you need to forgive? Who has hurt you so badly that they are living rent-free in your mind, taking up valuable space and trashing the joint at the same time? Who has hurt you so badly that your anger and resentment too often make you an outcast from the joy of the present moment? Who do you need to forgive? Norman Cousins wrote that life is an adventure in forgiveness. Yes, forgiveness is one of the most challenging of all adventures, with the potential of bringing great peace and joy into our lives. I found that there are some religious liberals who feel uncomfortable with the idea of forgiveness because it involves guilt. And guilt is a four-letter word for us, right? I want to encourage you to see forgiveness in an entirely different perspective, as a way of affirming, preserving, and renewing our relationships. Forgiveness is the process that reshapes our relationships from the straight line of anger and retaliation to the curve of connection. Think about it. When someone hurts us, whether physically or emotionally, we get angry, and our immediate response is an eye for an eye. We want to get even. We want to hurt them back. Have you ever felt so angry at another person that you want to tear their heart out and stomp on it and put it through a shredder and light a match to it? Neither have I. But what does that kind of anger do to us? When we lash out in anger, we become someone who is a stranger to us, someone whom we may not even recognize. And we are at the mercy of that stranger, no longer able to make our own choices, but being controlled by this alien entity. Yes, welcome to the world of zombies. When we do react out of anger, it may seem that we have no choice but to retaliate, but we always have the choice of responding with forgiveness. Now, this is important. To choose to forgive does not mean that we can't be angry. In fact, anger is a vital part of the process of forgiveness. A woman who was a victim of incest came to her minister and said, "It's not enough for me to say I have to forgive my father. I can't do that until I experience the rage and the sadness and the anger over how my childhood was. And that's what I have been afraid to do." Too many times, forgiveness is just a nice word for denying our pain and anger. But if the goal is to heal the relationship and to make it as whole as possible, then we must first of all claim our pain and anger. To say that we're willing to forget that we've been wrong does not heal a relationship. Only truth heals a relationship. Did you hear that? Only truth heals a relationship. The only way to reshape a relationship into the curve of connection is to communicate our hurt and, yes, our anger. But, and this is especially important, the purpose of the anger must not be to hurt the perpetrator, but to bring balance back to the relationship. If our interest is to hurt rather than heal, then we have jumped on that hellacious merry-go-round of retaliation that will eventually destroy our spirit. There's a Buddhist story that tells of just such a situation. A man is struck by an arrow from an unknown assailant. Rather than tending to the wound, he refuses to remove the arrow until the archer is found and punished. In the meantime, the wound festers until finally the poison kills him. Which is the more responsible for his death? The archer's letting go of the arrow or the victim's foolish holding on to his anger? Which is the most dangerous to us? The poison of someone else's anger or the poison of our own anger? If I'm hurt, it does not give me the right to hurt another. And if I choose to do so, I'm hurting not only the person I'm angry at, but I'm also hurting myself. Now, isn't this what often happens when we get angry? It may be someone we love very much. It may be someone who is long ago dead, and yet we continue fighting with them, holding on to our wrath, and thus keeping ourselves trapped in the past. During memorial services, I often use these healing words written by A. Powell Davies, the famed Unitarian minister. He wrote, "May no heart be troubled by things left unsaid or by past mistakes, for the goodness of life is great enough to heal and to forgive. The living owe the dead only loving remembrance, but not remorse, for all human relationships are imperfect." All human relationships are imperfect. Now, this guilt when a loved one dies is one of the most difficult of dragons we must battle. And the only way to overcome it is through a process of genuine forgiveness. To forgive requires that we have the courage to communicate our anger to the person who has offended us, but in a non-retaliatory fashion. Then we need to listen carefully to their response and enter into a dialogue, a conversation, a real relationship. Even if that person is no longer alive, we can still communicate our anger and forgive or ask forgiveness. It takes work, and it takes courage, and it takes a lifetime. No matter how old we are, we should always be moving towards forgiveness. This is a spiritual practice that grows as our spirit and our love grows. And even then, sometimes it doesn't work. The person you are angry at may be insensitive to your pain and disinterested in bringing about a resolution. All you can do then is to communicate as best you can how you've been hurt, and then let go and forgive anyway. It's not easy, but it's a lot harder to carry around this huge sack of anger and hurt and let it poison your soul. The key is not to take it to heart, because your heart should be a sanctuary and not a battleground. It's also important to remember that forgiveness does not require forgetfulness. We like to say that we forgive and forget, but in reality, we need to forgive and remember. We remember the hurt and pain, and yet we make a choice to try as best we can to forgive in spite of those memories. The most important person to forgive, and usually the most difficult, is of course ourselves, right? Our expectations for ourselves are usually so high that we can't help but fall short repeatedly. But we cannot love ourselves, or even like ourselves very much, unless we learn to forgive our multitude of imperfections. Now, my spiritual work right now is learning to forgive myself for not being the perfect minister for 40 years. Even after 40 years, you would think I'd be perfect, but I was never perfect. It was amazing. I've been retired for about a year and a half, and I still have trouble forgiving myself for all the perceived mistakes I made as a minister. And I imagine this is a typical retirement problem, because we have the time to reflect on all that we did during our careers and our relationships, and often we focus a lot more on our failures and shortcomings rather than our successes. And it helps me to realize that none of us can be perfect at anything, even ministers. Right, Roger? And it helps to remember and celebrate all the ways we have succeeded in our relationships, our careers, and as a human being. Now, sometimes we hurt others so badly that we must ask for forgiveness from a higher source. Only by laying our soul bare, by being totally honest with ourselves about how badly we've hurt another, can the grace of forgiveness be received. And sometimes we need to forgive God, even if we don't believe in God. A hospice volunteer told me once that she was struggling with how to help two patients. One, a young man in his 30s, was dying of AIDS and was wrestling with the question, why me? Why do I have to die so young? The other patient was a 96-year-old woman who had little quality of life and was angry with God for not letting her die. What can you say to these two people who are both suffering from not only extreme physical pain, but the spiritual agony of not understanding why they are being treated so unfairly? And I'm not sure what I would tell them, but my hope is that they were able to forgive God or life for the anguish they endured. In Malcolm Gladwell's recent book, David and Goliath, has anybody read that book? Wonderful book. I love it. He tells this moving story, just brought me to tears, about a Canadian couple whose young daughter was brutally raped and left tied up in a shack where she froze to death. Soon after, a man from their community visited the couple and told them how the murder of his child destroyed his life, leaving him depressed and angry and hopeless. And as you can imagine, that wasn't very helpful to this couple. But after the man left, the couple resolved never to let that happen to them. They did not want to become that kind of person. Never to give up on love or to give in to hopelessness. So being Mennonites, they were fortunate to have a tradition of forgiveness and retaliation. And that's what they resolved to do. With the help of their religious community, they used their grief to motivate them to forgive the man who murdered their daughter and to reach out to others who had suffered likewise. They decided to live full and loving lives in spite of the incredible grief and pain they suffered. And that's what your religious community can do for you. Forgiveness is not a solo event. It's about relationships. We need a tradition, a religious tradition that teaches the values of forgiveness and reconciliation, of love and relationship, and raises up these values as the most important part of our lives. And we need people around us who can be models and allies in helping us to live out those values. Our Unitarian Universalist tradition can and does offer that support. Now, I've got to tell you a story about an exceptional leader of one of my congregations, and I think this really proves the point of how supportive our tradition is to people in trying to learn how to forgive. This exceptional leader pulled into a Burger King drive-in one day for lunch, and she was accosted by two young men with handguns. When she refused to let them into her car, one of them shot her in the head. She somehow survived and went through a long process of physical and emotional recovery. She was and still is an amazingly strong and resilient woman who worked hard to become healthy again. About a year after the attack, she came to the decision that in order to let go of her anger and sadness, she needed to meet with the man who shot her. Now, both men had been arrested and incarcerated, and after some resistance from the prison officials, they'd never had anything like this happen before, they finally did meet. And it was the beginning of a long and healing relationship for both of them, in which they both shared their life stories along with their deepest hopes and fears. The woman helped the man get out of jail earlier than he would have normally, and she helped him find a job, and he was able to totally turn his life around and become a much better human being. And her life was transformed in the process. She was able to let go of the pain and the anger that she had held so close to her heart. Now, we hear stories like this every now and then. And in fact, at the early service, one of the videos was a person who went through a very similar circumstance. And they're so hard for me to believe, and I think so hard for most of us to comprehend, how someone could reach out like that and forgive someone who tried to murder them or who murdered their child. How could anyone have that kind of courage? Rachel Naomi Raymond tells a story that helps to explain how people can do that. And it's a story of a baby girl being blessed by a rabbi. And when the baby girl felt the rabbi's attention shift away from her, she reached forward and grabbed his nose. I used to love doing the naming and dedication services with the kids. You never knew what they were going to do, and it was always so much fun. But gently, the rabbi freed himself and continued the sermon. And after a few minutes, she took his tie and put his tie in her mouth. The entire congregation chuckled. The rabbi rescued his tie and smiled at the child. Then she put her tiny arms around his neck. That was always the best part. Looking at us over the top of her head, he said, "Think about it. Is there anything she can do that you could not forgive her for?" Now, throughout the room, people began to nod in recognition, thinking perhaps of their own children and grandchildren, still smiling. And then he asked, "And when does that stop? When does it get hard to forgive? At 3? At 7? At 14? At 35? How old does someone have to be before you forget that everyone is a child of God?" Isn't that an amazing story? When does forgiveness end? Now think about that. And I've been meditating on this for quite a while, and I continue to do so. And this is a big challenge I'm giving to you right now. And I want you to reflect on this, at least for the next week. I've been reflecting on it for months now. If you knew all there was to know about another human being, everything that motivated them, that made them who they were, their background, their parents, their everything, their culture, if you knew everything there was to know about another human being, could you forget them, forgive them, no matter what they did? Could you let go of your anger if you knew why that person did what they did? That's your challenge, is to reflect on that. And what everybody comes back with is, "How about Hitler?" Well, reflect on Hitler too. Reflect on everybody and anybody. If you knew everything about them, could you forgive them? So when we can open our awareness to the pain we have caused others and seek to restore our relationship by asking forgiveness, we move towards peace and love. When we open our hearts to our own pain and are able to express the sorrow and anger in a non-retaliatory way, then we can give the gift of forgiveness to another. And when we can see life as a circular web of connection with all beings who are interwoven into that web, then we experience grace at its deepest level. And forgiveness comes to our hearts, and we are home. May this be a religious community where forgiveness is taught and learned and celebrated. And may you be both one who is held and one who holds others in that great adventure of forgiveness. So may it be. Amen.